Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 511th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of practice board at the College of Family Physicians of Canada. I'm also an adjunct professor at the University of Alberta.
And Mike, you know that wine is good for you. Sorry, it's bad for you. Actually, it's good for you.
Beer is bad for you. No, wait, it's good for you.
No, it's alcohol. Is it? Or I thought if just drinking alcohol was fine. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's good for you. Actually, and it's in massive quantities, it's good. In low quantities, it's bad. The other way around.
Yeah, I know. It's very confusing. So guess what?
I think we all agree that in big quantities and continually drinking too much is bad for you.
No doubt.
All the rest gets into serious arguments among researchers, and you're going to tell us why.
Exactly. And, you know, I think we can start off with like one of the best quotes of all time from Homer Simpson: to alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
I absolutely love that quote.
I know.
Of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah. We can, I don't think you can, that is so much wisdom.
And, well, that show obviously has a lot of that in there that is integrated quite seamlessly into the ridiculousness of it all.
No, exactly. And you know, there's a history. Well, there's a massive history of alcohol. I'm not talking about how long we've gone back, how long people have been drinking alcohol, but you know, thinking about the health issues around it. I mean, you know, probably just as you were maybe just getting into university and me just finishing university, there was really nothing. All alcohol ingestion was thought to be bad. There was no sort of health benefits that were being talked about. It was just, you know, people drinking and driving and getting, you know, and dying from liver problems and ascites and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, certainly up until the, that was at least up until the 70s, but there was some stuff that came out in the 70s that there was some sort of benefit. And, you know, I'm sure everybody has heard, you know, since that time that there is some benefit from drinking. I mean, I think you totally agree with that, eh?
Right. We've all heard that it's good in moderation. We particularly heard that red wine was supposed to, for a while, and it's still occasionally talked about, that red wine is better than other drinks. There's even some, I have some articles on why beer is good for you. Mm-hmm. And they're usually absolutely bogus.
Yeah.
And there's reasons for that, which we'll get into some of today.
Yeah. So before, if you were drinking before the 1970s, you knew it was bad for you and you had no excuse, but then after that you had some excuse to say it's good for me. So that's what we're going to do, is try and, work all the way through that. And as Mike sort of started at the beginning saying, there is no doubt that, you know, if you're an alcoholic, that's bad. And I think you said that because you're a healthcare provider, right?
I think, yeah, there's some, you know, it's vague, but there's some lessons in life as well that seem to point to those conclusions that any substance in excess can be harmful.
Yeah, no, for sure. And even part of when you try to look at all of this evidence, it's tricky, because even how you define alcohol, and, you know, I'm not even going to say the word low dose. Well, I just did, but I'm not going to say it. But, you know, what is a, you know, and it comes down to a lot of things with nutrition. What is a serving, right? Because, I mean, if I asked you how big of a serving is a serving of, I don't know, broccoli, I don't think you and I probably wouldn't agree on what that is.
There's patients who are driven to insanity with things like, because they want to be very precise people, rule driven. And when you say to them, a medium apple, what is a medium apple? What's a, you know, what's a serving of broccoli? Like you say, is it a cup of broccoli? And is it cooked? Is it crushed? Is it, you know, there's lots of stuff there.
Yeah. So for the purposes of our discussion, I'm going to be talking about alcohol is 10 grams of alcohol. Now, that is how you order wine at the restaurant, isn't it?
Like 10 grams. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's in the serving, but what I order is 1 liter.
Yes. Yeah. Whatever grams that is. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever so, grams that is, I'll have a liter of wine.
Yeah. Garçon, you add at the end. So a bunch of you going, what the hell is 10 grams? And so that's sort of a relatively small glass of wine, say, you know, 100 mils, or just over three ounces of alcohol at sort of 12 or 13%. Or it's a can or a bottle of beer, and not the 5% beer, it's 3.5% beer, or a shot of whiskey, which is typically 40% alcohol by volume. So when we're saying the number of drinks that we're talking about, each one of those is a serving or a drink. And as you know, many of the sort of guidelines that are out there suggest that, you know, you, well, they don't say you should drink, but they said, you know, 1 to 2 is fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of where it is. And, you know, what's fascinating to me is that when you look at the best evidence around how much do we drink, it's right around that on average. You know, it's about the average female drinks about one drink a day, and the average male, of course, we have to be better, we drink two.
Better is in quotes there.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of air quotes there. And like I said, you know, we'll talk very a little bit about this at the end, but, you know, obviously things like binge drinking, if drinking affects your personal life, if you black out a lot when you drink, if you drink in the mornings, if your friends and family think you're an alcoholic, if you go through withdrawal, those are all awful things. And that means you're, you can quote me on this, you're probably drinking too much.
I remember an addictions doctor saying to me one time that, or an addictions, maybe it was the counselor, I can't remember, but they were, this was additional training I was getting. And they said, if you're having a problem, if your patient's having a problem with alcohol, they have a problem with alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in other words, if they're having, you know, liver problems, if they're having problems at home, if they're having, they're getting caught drunk driving, if they're drunk driving and not getting caught, you still can find out about it, etc., then they're having a problem with alcohol.
So we're not even talking about that because we're already agreeing you're drinking too much.
Yeah.
So now let's get into the best available evidence. Now there's, you know, all of the outcomes that are associated with this, you know, there's mortality, heart attacks, strokes and cancers and injuries and all that sort of stuff. There's lots of things that can be associated with the use of alcohol. And the best, and it's one of the best cohorts I've ever seen written. It was done by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And Mike, it was a massive meta-analysis, you know, where they take all sorts of things and add them all up together. They looked at 592 studies, and not only did they look at studies, they actually went to the countries, but they identified how much alcohol is sold in countries. And
wow.
Yeah, they got all this sort of data. It was really an intensive look at how much do we drink? What's the impact of it? How do we do this? And it was really interesting. This was in 2018, they published it. And as you know, often when these sort of reports come out, there's a, you know, one-liner that comes out about them in the news. And it says, their conclusion was, our results show that the safest level of drinking is none.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that. I cried a little
bit. I do remember
it. Yeah, did you cry like I did?
Oh, I was manly weeping.
Yeah, yeah. So I just had a drink instead.
Very masculine weeping.
Yeah.
I didn't have just one drink to drown my sorrows.
Yeah.
I don't know if this should come as a surprise to us, James.
No.
Yeah. So we're back to the 1970s, as you said.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in that regard, yeah. Or at least the conclusion is. It doesn't necessarily mean that's what the data shows, but the conclusion is that. And so, you know, it's an interesting one because, and the more and more I've looked at this stuff, I think it may be impossible for humans to distract, to detach themselves from their opinions about food when they're making conclusions. It's really tricky. And, you know, because if you look at the data, it doesn't actually end up saying that. Let me sort of work you through it. It's a bit hard because without having visuals here, but there's some data that we have. So what they did is they had an outcome of, it was basically a mortality outcome. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's not the only outcome that would be of importance for alcohol, for sure. But it's they did.
Are you going to suggest that fun is the other important outcome?
Well, no, we'll get to that. But, yeah, no, I'm talking about the harm, or maybe the too much fun could be a harm. But it's they had their main findings. You could go in and there's a figure that sort of displayed what they called their disability adjusted life years. So it's basically a number that takes all of the things that are bad and adds them all together, and they see who has more of these. And even if you look at this graph, there is no doubt that they're at zero. That's your sort of your baseline. As you drink more, it goes up. That's a given. But as with all of this research, it's all based on the numbers. And in fact, when you look at, if it's one drink a day, that was not different than zero drinks a day. So it's a bit disingenuous to say that there is no safe level of drinking. You're looking at the outcome that they looked at. I'm not, there may be other reasons why there's no safe level of drinking, but their evidence doesn't support that. Now, as you go up in the number of drinks a day, you do see things like if it's two drinks a day, the risk of this disability adjusted life year goes up to, it's up about 8%. And then three drinks a day, it's 15%. Four drinks a day, it's 25%, and so on. And those are all relative increases. So the data does suggest that once you get above one, there is an increased risk, but not at one. And I know that some people are going, well, that's a real, you know, nuance that, is it really important? Well, if a person enjoys a drink a day, we shouldn't be telling them it's necessarily unsafe. And we'll get to some of the absolute numbers in a minute. But that, do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, no, it's the challenge here is, as you say, it's how the lens that we look at the information mm-hmm. from. So if I was someone who wanted to hedge my bets and be extraordinarily careful mm-hmm. and look at this data and go, it does seem to go up in a relatively consistent pattern from zero.
Yeah.
So and you talked about one drink a day, so I'm going to take it even further. So even at one drink a week, there's a possible increased risk if we could find numbers big enough to measure it.
Right.
So, and what would that increased risk be? Well, maybe, I'm just going to throw out a number randomly, one in 10 million?
Yeah, yeah.
And that for some people would be enough, yeah. depending on the lens that you look at things with.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what I totally get what you're saying. Now, on the other side, I'll argue from a statistic side. Mm-hmm. Often, when you start to tease these things out, you can't separate, for example, five drinks from six drinks a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like you can't separate zero from one.
No.
But you can separate one from six.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, no. It's and everything to do with nutrition is kind of like that. Is the extreme.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can. So if you're someone who's going to look at that, you can come out with two interpretations. You can come out with your interpretation, which is the data doesn't really show an increased risk at very moderate drinking.
Yeah.
Or you can look at it as there's a very consistent pattern here that as you add drinks, things get worse. Mm-hmm. So naturally, no drink is safe.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. So it depends on the lens. And
the lens matters more than the evidence, as you and I know from looking at evidence for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What we bring into interpreting the evidence is more important than the evidence itself.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so I gave you the relative numbers. So, you know, you can sort of ballpark it, you know, for every drink your relative increase goes up maybe, you know, 7 or 8%, something like that, maybe a little bit more, depending on what numbers we're talking about. And it certainly ramps up pretty good once you get to, you know, alcoholism. And but what was interesting, and you have to go try and find the data on this, is you have to tease out what are the absolute risks that are associated with these relative risks. And it's really interesting. And the best thing I could find is that they looked at how many, what was the risk of developing an alcohol-related health problem based on the number of drinks a day. And the numbers that I was able to tease out is if you do not drink, and now it's a bit of a misnomer to say it's an alcohol-related health problem, because if you don't drink, it's not really an alcohol-related health problem. But these are the baselines of people who have these issues. If you don't drink any drinks a day, 914 out of 100,000 people per year get some of the things that I'm going to say. If you drink one drink a day, it goes from 914 per 100,000 to 918 per 100,000.
So there you go.
That's not a big number.
No, by that's anybody's it's an increase, right? And so if I'm very against, if I take it out of alcohol, we talked about the person who is passionately against eggs.
Yeah.
This would be enough for him to go, you should never eat eggs again.
No, exactly. And you know, and if this is completely probably not how you should extrapolate evidence, but if you went from that's per year and then you went it up to over 30 years of drinking, it might get to a 0.1% absolute increase in an alcohol-related health problem over 30 years. So again, you're right.
One in a thousand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, when you get to two drinks a day, you get to over 30 years, it's about 1.5%. If you get to five drinks a day, now it's 10%. Now those are numbers that I think would start to influence you, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And unless you really are just drinking.
If you're dependent, if you're really suffering from the condition, the substance use disorder, no, won't influence you. Risks rarely do. But you know, this is the lens problem. And I kind of laughed right at the very beginning when you said most people are drinking around what is, in quotes, acceptable. Mm-hmm. And that was true of salt. We mostly, if you look at a lot of the salt studies, where you get a group that says almost any salt is bad for you.
Oh yeah.
Then you get another group that's analyzing things that say, you know what, we're probably, most of us are okay.
Yeah.
And in this case, you can get a group that's saying any amount of alcohol is bad, and then another group saying, you know, 1 to 2 drinks a day is probably fine.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. And so those are the absolute numbers. And then it was also really useful to step back and also go, so when we're talking about a bad outcome, what are we talking about? What are the outcomes? And what was interesting is that when they looked at, you know, the what they called alcohol attributable deaths, there were three primary ones that stood out. Tuberculosis, and we'll get to that in just a minute, followed by road injuries, and then self-harm.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah, so those are the three main ones that they were talking about. All of them, I'm pretty sure you don't want any of those, right, Mike?
Well, I don't want anything, but I don't want COVID, but I got that.
Yeah. I mean, you do want money.
Yeah, I want money, but I don't want any of the things that you've listed there.
No,
yeah.
No, for sure. But then, but now remember, this was a worldwide look at alcohol use. Something like tuberculosis is not, is it a problem? Sure. Is it a worldwide problem? We don't see a lot of tuberculosis in Canada.
No, it's still a problem in Canada.
Yeah.
But and we did this, if you recall the study, James, where I don't know if you were on that one with us, but the study where we looked at the most common conditions for people presenting to primary care, and in the developing world, the tuberculosis was in the top 10 or 15.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And so this really, and then you can, I think most of us can start to imagine, if I'm using alcohol to excess repeatedly, it's going to reduce my resilience, and an infection like tuberculosis is waiting for that to happen, right?
They're waiting. And it may also, you know, none of these are randomized controlled trials. It may be an association. It may be a confounder.
Absolutely. You know, as well. I'm trying to make logic of it, but a better point. Yeah. It could be nothing more than they travel together.
Yeah, yeah. Or there's so many ways that you can sort of put that. So if tuberculosis is not an issue, then that makes the numbers that I just presented even smaller.
Yeah.
And then the next ones are, you know, the road injuries and then self-harm, which I would suggest are some of really the worst outcomes from alcohol.
Yeah, well, they're both terrible. And mm-hmm. it's funny, if you ask most of us as practicing clinicians, we might come up with road injuries mm-hmm. and accidents, right? There's mm-hmm. the old analogy about the young man, the kind of, what's it called? The Darwin Award, where hold my beer and watch this. It's a little bit of liquid courage, and then they do reckless and dangerous things. The issues here, when you ask a doc what they're going to think about with alcohol-related injuries, they're going to come up with things like liver failure.
Exactly, yeah.
Ascites, varices, all of those kind of things. Wernicke-Korsakoff, those kind of things that we think about all the time with alcohol. And mm-hmm. yet, what's the killer? What's coming out tops? And that's part of the two things that you've just described, James, the two... not tuberculosis in specifics, but the other two are something that are getting people young.
Yes.
So even if it's happening infrequently, it's going to count very heavily against life years lost.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, no, for sure. I think that's a really important point. And I do want to make sure that we're not making light of anything to do with self-harm or road injuries and, you know, drunk driving and all that sort of stuff. But if you don't drink and drive, and if when you drink, you know, you don't do, you know, silly things, or you don't do things that might be harmful, you know, you don't become aggressive and all those sorts of things, then those sort of what alcohol attributable deaths are somewhat eliminated, I think.
Yeah, so that you're talking there mostly, I think what you're referring to is kind of the reckless behavior that might come with alcohol use, and that's distinctly separate from some of the self-harm stuff that would be like people who drink and then attempt self-harm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just take their own life. And that's a whole other ball of wax, because it's, you know, which is causing the problem there? Is it the alcohol that's causing the depression is it the alcohol that's taking away the inhibition? Is it the depression that's leading you to drink alcohol so you've made a decision to self-harm? Like there's many nuanced layers to that. All of them sad.
Yeah.
All of them very unfortunate. And obviously, you know, we talk about this all the time in psychiatry, like when people are suffering from mental illness, it's not a great time for substance use.
No. And they will go towards alcohol because it's an easy one to get.
Yeah. 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 For that, if it's to, it's to disinhibit it, to move towards that. It's actually a very sad story.
Oh, right? Absolutely. No doubt.
So many patients that's your combination with the self-harm. Some alcohol is involved in the self-harm attempt.
Yeah.
So I know we're drifting a bit from the kind of things we were talking about when we were joking about the Darwin Award and all those kind of things. But this is, you know, it is a very kind of sad thing, the way alcohol both is causing the condition and being a facilitator for even
more. Exactly. So we just don't want to make light of that issue at all. So those are the three main ones that they talk about. But they looked at a whole bunch of different outcomes. I think somewhere, you know, I think there's around 20 or between 20 and 25 different outcomes. You know, anywhere from, you know, our heart disease or diabetes, the transport injuries, as we sort of already talked about, atrial fibrillation, and a whole bunch of different cancers. And they had a lot of data to look at. You know, so and to get that information, I had to download the Excel file that was there with 4,000 rows of data and try and make sense of all of this. And again, only looking for what is the harm up to three drinks a day, because I'm going to suggest, and it's my opinion, once you get above three drinks a day, that's probably a problem. But that's that's my judgment on that sort of thing. So so they had. These outcomes. And so what's interesting, and I had not appreciated this as much as until I started looking at it, is that of the sort of 22 outcomes that they looked at, 15 were worsened. So that's that's a fair amount of worsening, if you would.
That's a fair amount of and that's what I was saying earlier about the things you listed wouldn't immediately jump to a lot of doctors' minds. And again, they were, I think they rose to the top because of the life years lost. They were young. Yeah. But the things that you're listing now, it's just a great reminder. The hazards are long.
Mm-hmm. No,
they're long.
Yeah. So 15 were worsened, 4 were not impacted. And by that, no association with bad outcomes for people who drink up to 3 drinks a day. And then 3 outcomes benefited. So, and by benefit, again, we're not saying that it's cause and effect because it's a cohort, but there we go with that. So what was, and so the ones that were beneficial were things like ischemic heart disease, which we have heard this story a bazillion times, in that we believe, and I don't mean we, you and I, but there's a belief that alcohol is good for your heart. And they were able to show that, you know, 1 to 3 drinks a day was associated with a 15% reduction in heart attacks. That is likely, well, not likely, that is just, that's the data that we have showing that it's, that we've had previously with other cohort evidence, that it's a reduction in an association with heart disease if you drink. And, you know, we'll get into the whole thing of why that may be or not be. But if you look at all of these outcomes, ischemic heart disease or cardiovascular disease is a greater risk than things like cirrhosis and cancers and all of those even added together. So when you see a benefit, and again, quotation benefit, that's why, even though way more things are impacted in theory by it, why overall it doesn't seem to do much to people who drink 1 or 2 or 3 drinks a day. But I was very impressed by how many cancers are associated with even 1 or 2 drinks a day.
Yeah, and I think I'll just kind of summarize what you're saying. Yeah. You're saying a small reduction in a common outcome is more impactful or quite impactful compared to these multiple increases in very rare outcomes or very rare events. And so it's a numbers game, and that's why some of the earlier studies may have suggested an overall benefit from these interventions, but from alcohol use in cohort studies.
And if you only look at heart disease, then you'd see that and miss the other things.
Yeah. Or even because heart disease is so much more common.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, the relative harm, you know, that when you look at the numbers, I mean, we're talking a 15% reduction in ischemic heart disease, but we're talking a 60% increase in lip and oral cavity cancer. We're looking at 50% increase in esophageal cancer, 25% increase in breast cancer, and things like that. But again, those are less common than cardiovascular disease, which is why probably 1 drink or 2 drinks didn't show any, you know, didn't show much of any health risk. So those are now, you know, it's taken us, what, half an hour to sort of explain just the nuances of a very well done look at or meta-analysis of cohort trials for alcohol. It's always very nuanced, and it comes down to almost always the numbers. It's a numbers game.
Yeah, and it's also what's happening here, and you and I've talked about this, the way that we get these numbers, who's in there and how do you adjust for them? We know that adjustments can help you get a direction, an effect in the direction you want. So if I was looking at heart disease, if that was my question, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that people who drink more at certain time frames were more likely to be smokers.
Mm-hmm.
And if I then looked at that and I said, oh, look, well, they're more smokers, so I have to adjust for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to take away the risk of smoking. I might actually take away so much risk that it looks like alcohol is a benefit now,
mm-hmm.
without it actually being a benefit, but just because I adjusted for the smoking risk.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is why don't we have a randomized controlled trial of alcohol?
We should. I mean, that's the only way we're going to address this.
Yeah.
If I was on the ethics group of this, I would refuse it.
No, you wouldn't probably go into the trial because there might be a chance that you'd...
There's a chance that I could end up in either group. I have to drink. Yeah, depending on the type of trial.
Yeah.
You need to drink 8 drinks a day.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to take that.
And, no, for sure. Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah.
So these things, and I've said before, when people get frustrated with the fact that we don't have clear answers for this, I've asked audiences before, how many of you would be willing to be in a coffee study where you had to agree to drink 3 cups of coffee every single day for 5 years,
mm-hmm.
or never touch coffee again for 5 years?
Yeah. Just not going to happen.
No one's going to go in that trial because they either love or hate coffee.
Yeah, no, exactly. So we will never have definitive answers, but it's why it's so important to go over that. Now, there's a lot of other issues, and I don't see necessarily any negative issues, but there's a lot of other evidence around the use of alcohol, and we'll get it into that into the next podcast. But there's a lot of stuff around. You know, what about that red wine theory? Well, we've sort of dabbled with that a little bit, there's a fair amount of evidence that's looked at what is the effect of alcohol on different surrogate markers, because maybe that it might explain it. You know, around the either benefit and or harm from a cardiovascular perspective. You've probably heard. I don't know if you've heard of antioxidants, Mike.
Oh, so important.
So, and there's a thing called resveratrol, which is in theory in wine, and it has potential, and I'm, again, so many air quotes here, benefits, and we can talk about the evidence of that. And then, as we know, there are a number of reasons to be drinking around from a social drinking perspective. There's the risk of atrial fibrillation, there's been some actually cool data recently in the last year and a half.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about that maybe before. And then obviously, you probably heard it here first, but alcohol can hurt your liver.
What?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I know. Call me crazy.
And this isn't even a premium one.
And you look at what you guys are learning. So we'll get into that in the next podcast. This podcast was of interest to you, as I've mentioned in previous podcasts, over the last year or two, I've put together a book called The Nutrition Proposition, which is available on Amazon. You can download it You can get it as a paperback or as a Kindle edition. And what we're going to be doing over the next, 5 years, no, it won't be that long, is we're going to go over some of the content. We're going to talk about these things because nutrition is very poorly understood, primarily because the evidence is sketchy at best. But at least when there is evidence, it's important to know what it actually says or does not say. So we're going to go over that. And we would also love it if you would attend our annual course here in Vancouver. We're doing it live we haven't had the course for almost 3 years now, but it's going to be May 27, 28 in Vancouver. All you have to do is go to hectalks.com and check out what we're doing there. And anything else, Mike?
Nope, that's all good, Jay.
So I think we'll leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.